Welcome to the AI Asia Pacific Institute podcast. The rise of AI presents important legal and ethical challenges for society. In this podcast, we invite leaders from different industries and creators of new AI to debate the big questions. This is the AI Asia Pacific Institute podcast. This episode is brought to you by Audible. Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet. You can listen when you are taking walks, you can listen while you are cooking, whenever you can. The best thing? Audible is offering AI Asia Pacific listeners 2 free audiobooks with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to the link shared in the podcast description and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure you subscribe to see the link. Then, download your free title and start listening. It's that easy. Looking for book recommendations? We highly recommend AI Superpowers. China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order is a 2018 nonfiction book by Kay Fu Lee. Kate McDonald is the New Zealand Government Fellow to the World Economic Forum and the Government Representative to OECD Network of AI Experts, working in the areas of artificial intelligence and regulation. Kate is an experienced civil servant with a background in policy, international relations, and futures thinking, and has spent the last 10 years working in the areas of cybersecurity and digital policy. She has held various roles for the New Zealand government, including setting up the new Digital Minister's Office and working closely with New Zealand's international partners in the Digital Nations Group. While home in New Zealand, she is currently based at the Ministry of Business Innovation and Employment, where she is working on digital and AI policy. With you now, our host for this podcast, Kelly Forbes.
Hi, Kate, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
Excellent. So perhaps a good place to start our conversation might be to focus on, you know, to unleash the potential of AI safely. Issues such as accuracy, human control, transparency, bias, and privacy need to be addressed. How should we be thinking about distributing this responsibility?
Well, I think it's quite an interesting question, Kelly. And I think there's a number of different approaches that you can take. I think that generally in the world at the moment, people are thinking about regulation and what does regulation look like. But for me, regulation is a big spectrum. And so it starts down the hard end with things like legislation and regulation, actual acts, what we call the hard law end. But it also goes through some of the softer sort of ends. So you could do things like standards, certification, charters, right down to the soft law end, which is more like education and awareness raising. So there's quite a big spectrum on there. And I think because AI is such a ubiquitous tool, really there's a lot of people who are working in that space, and there's a lot of responsibility that could be attributed at different points of that spectrum. So I think in some ways, if you're the government and you're thinking about regulation, or you're thinking about what you might want to do in this space, some of the ideas that you could start thinking about are using levers that you've already got available to you, like funding or procurement, and making sure that you give preference to companies who are actually going to build ethics into their AI so that you've already got that in on the ground floor. You could start to make sure that any proposals that you're doing yourself in government are actually evaluated with a range of considerations, including things like accuracy, transparency, privacy, maybe human rights impacts. You could start to work on a number of different processes, bring your business communities, your industry, your civil societies in, start to work on a number of different processes to address algorithmic bias, for example. So, you know, there's a lot of historical bias there. There's a lot of inequalities that are being built in with the data that we've got. So you could start to think about, what do your data sets look like? How could you cleanse those? How could you actually start to make your data a lot less biased? You could also start talking with industry to see whether or not they could self-regulate, what sort of things they'd be prepared to do, whether or not they want to work with governments and actually co-design regulation right at the very start. So I think there's quite a few options in that space that might be ones where you can start to think about where the responsibility lies. And I think too, if I'm sort of thinking in this space too, I think one of the things that has interested me quite a lot in this more regulatory type of space is, what sort of definition do you need? Like, you need a definition before you start to think about allocating responsibility. Like, what is the limits of the AI you're talking about? What areas are you talking about? Where does it sit on the spectrum of AI? Is it simple algorithms? Is it something a lot deeper than that? And I think once you start to think about putting responsibility on people, especially if you're going down that hard regulation end, you want to think a lot about what's a decent definition. Because if you do get regulation or legislation in place, the courts need to know how to apply some of those rules. Businesses need to know how those rules are going to apply to them and what it means for them. And people need to know sort of where the limits are as well, so they can feel a little bit more security around it. But getting consensus around that definition and the scope of AI is really hard. And I think it's particularly hard in some of those policy conversations. Shall I keep going? I've got lots to say.
Yes, please. Keep going.
Okay. Well, I think the other thing that I'm kind of interested in too is that I think that policymakers and academics or designers, users of AI, they think about AI in slightly different ways as well. And that affects the definition and how you start to think about responsibility. Because I think when policymakers start to talk about definitions, they compare systems to the way that humans think and to human behavior. And I think that that's actually really useful when you're thinking about future technologies where some of these questions of responsibility are going to start to hit us. And I think that if you were going to talk about a good definition, you would want to think about something that is inclusive of both the current technologies we have today, but is also thinking about future applications, so that it's going to be a definition that can move with the times. It's going to need to be accessible for non-expert people. And I think you also need to allow for implementation of reporting and oversight. So build those monitoring roles and structures into it. And I think that once you've sort of managed to get a definition, you've got everybody to agree on it, it's a little bit easier to have conversations then about where responsibility might sit and who's best placed to actually take responsibility for different parts of that AI ecosystem. Sure. So yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah, so very helpful. So, and I think a lot of your suggestions there are, you know, things that can be done now prior to regulation or prior to any other developments. So these are things that we can all start to think about now. So to break down a little bit of, you know, everything you just said there, arriving at some sort of definition where we can all agree on, that goes to even when we have to think about these different ethical frameworks around the world, right? How we have, you know, ethical frameworks coming up, made available, and they might have some principles that are very similar to each other, but it seems like, you know, most countries are still doing things quite differently. What is your suggestion around how can we arrive at some sort of common definition there that everyone can follow?
Well, I think there's quite a bit of work going on in the world at the moment, especially around that space with ethics and principles. So, you know, just off the top of my head, people like the OECD, the UN, and the EU, a number of different countries have come up, a number of different organisations have come up with a set of ethical principles, which are generally being adopted by countries into their own more domestic type principles. And I think that we're starting to get to that space where we're starting to agree what some of those common principles might be. And I think as we go a little bit further down the track and people start to look at regulation more seriously, and I know that the Europeans are starting to do that at the moment, definitions are going to be a core part of that. So I think that we'll see it a lot more happening in that space then.
Yeah. Because I think that would make things a lot easier for the industry and businesses as well, navigating these challenges. I think it's been quite challenging for them to keep up mm-hmm. with these developments because AI is very much cross-border. So it's tricky to do something right in one country, but you know, from the moment that they step into a different territory, things change.
I think that's true. And I think one of the things that's probably really confusing for businesses as well is that you can't regulate a technology. And so that's very tricky. So I think looking much more at different outcomes, are you worried about privacy? Are you worried about liability? Are you worried about, you know, rights implications? I think if you know what the outcome is that you're trying to get, it's much easier for countries who are thinking about regulating to start to think about how to do that. And I think about when the European Union brought in the GDPR, a number of countries around the world had their own privacy legislation, and it wasn't that hard to actually align all of those different pieces of legislation across the world because we knew what the outcome was that was wanted. And I think that makes life a lot easier. So the definition is not necessarily in that point, what is AI, but it's much more, what is the outcome you want and how can you align to make sure you get that outcome for people or for business?
Yeah, yeah. So in a recent article, you and your colleague Lofred proposed that one way countries could do this would be through setting up a body that is visible focus for AI, a center for excellence. Can you share with us, please, how you envisage the center's role in increasing ethical AI?
Yeah, sure. So Lofred and I, and we had another colleague called Mick Costigan, the three of us were part of a World Economic Forum group. We're looking at how you might reimagine regulation. And so all World Economic Forum projects have a global community with people drawn from a number of different places, industry, academia, governments, civil society. So we had a big workshop with that group in San Francisco in, gosh, it's a long time ago now, pre-COVID, back in January this year. And so one of the things that they talked to us about was that they think that it would be a very good idea to have some sort of body within a country that was supportive and educational and that was able to shape the ethical development of AI within that country. And because they were looking in particular at the New Zealand example, they thought that it would be really useful to look at government in particular. So sort of start to think about what government might look like using AI, and once you had built up that sort of ethical approach, you could then roll that out as a best practice example or a role model to business. So I think the idea behind it is that if you build a centre for excellence, it can add a lot of value because it can build trust, and enabling that social license from your communities is really vital if AI is actually going to take off and deliver the potential that it's got. And I don't just mean social license for government to use it. I think businesses also need to know that their customers are comfortable and happy with the way that AI is being used. So we know AI is game changing. It's already game changing. We know that it can solve some of these thorny problems that we're facing in the world, like climate change and healthcare. And it can also help existing, it can help existing businesses be more productive, and it's going to enable a lot of new businesses too. But before it can do any of that, we do need to hear from people what they think it should look like. And so we think that governments ought to be sort of starting to work with businesses to help them think about what this looks like and embed good processes in, and that governments ought to be educating their populations on what AI is, what their rights are in terms of AI, what the values are that people want to see in it, and make sure that populations are ready for the opportunities and the challenges. So in terms of the centre, I think that one of the ways that it can actually build trust and start to solve some of these issues is that it can draw staff from across industry, government, academia, civil society, a big multidisciplinary cross-boundary type of staff, and start to work in a collaborative way to provide advice and to co-design solutions. And I think that's also useful because it means there's a large number of views that are being included in that group straight away. And it also provides a face out to the rest of the world too, so that you are making sure that a number of different views are heard. Secondly, I think it's a good way for governments to start to tackle that lack of awareness in the community. It's a centre is a focal point for AI. It can start to do community outreach. It can start to talk to people, can start to raise awareness about AI and about conversations about people's level of comfort with using it. And then finally, I think the centre also acts as a peer support group. It provides users of AI with a place where they can come together and share concerns and problems and talk with a group of their peers and also the experts. And if it's a friendly place, if it's open enough, I think people will be quite comfortable having discussions about what's right and wrong, what they're comfortable with, what other people might be comfortable with, what they're worried about, and some of the solutions that there might be for fixing some of those things. So I think that was the general idea of it. The group also gave us a large number of functions that a body could have, which I'm happy to go into if you want me to start to talk a little bit about those.
Yes, please. Sounds good.
Okay, so I think I've touched on a couple of these, but in general, some of the things they talked about were the centre could be for awareness and understanding. It could be for network and community enablement. It could be for providing funding and partnerships to businesses and to groups. It could be a policy shop looking at ethics and standards, could even be a regulatory type body. Could be about capability development, looking at building skills where you want to move your workforce to. Could be practical advice and guidance, could partner with marginalised or diverse groups and make sure that those views are being heard and we're looking at equality and bias issues. Could be about measurement and analysis, could be an international face, working with other international bodies, bringing things in. Could act as a hub for pooling expertise on the development of AI. And it could also be a sort of a continuous identification and iteration of best practices. So there's a range of different tools in there, and we think that countries who are at different stages of maturity in their AI evolution will want different functions, and you may start out with one set of functions and over time you evolve to a different set. So it's a constantly moving type of body.
Right, so the body will be evolving, and it's not necessarily that we need different bodies, but one body is able to perform different functions as it evolves.
I think so, yeah, because I think that what everybody agrees is that there is a real lack of skills out there, people who know anything about this. And I think that you need to build a level of general awareness about a lot of these issues before you start to go a little bit further down the track of some of this AI, particularly in countries that haven't done a lot of it to date and who are a bit scared of doing it, because it's quite a big thing to be taking on, and it's quite a scary technology. And what most people know about it is killer robots and what they see on Hollywood movies. So I think you've got a lot of misconceptions that you have to start to get rid of on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you've probably in most countries got a fairly advanced tech sector who already know what they're doing and just want to be given a bit of support. So within a society there's already quite a lot of different levels of maturity, and I think that you need an agency that can kind of go between those but put its emphasis on the bits that are most important at any given moment in time for a country.
Essentially. And I'll probably say to that point that you made about education there, I think that's important so that we can talk about these ethical issues, but also that we can encourage innovation, right? Because what I see in industry is that a lot of people are hesitant in embracing the technology for that same concern that you mentioned there, because they don't know what it is. All we know is those movies from Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's true. I think that, you know, people have very strange views about AI. And the other thing I've found a lot is people use certainly algorithms all the time. Anytime they're on social media, they're using algorithms. It's quite ubiquitous in a part of their everyday life, but they don't necessarily see that or understand that. And I think talking to them about that and showing them it's not actually frightening because you're already using it with no adverse effects so far and usually getting quite good outcomes as a result of it. So I think there's a lot of awareness raising that has to go on.
Yeah. So, Kate, do you see these bodies operating? So each country would have their own body, their own center of excellence, and would they interact with each other?
Well, I think, you know, you don't need to do a body, but I think what we were talking about in our global community was it's a very easy way for a country to start to show that it's taking AI quite seriously, and it provides a focal point for other countries to come and talk to you about artificial intelligence. And I think because AI is a global technology and it has the potential to solve global problems, it makes sense for different AI centres within different countries to join forces and have a global network. So I don't know how long that would take to do, Kelly, but I think already we see in a number of countries are already starting to collaborate on this. They're already working together. So I think it would be a natural progression for there to be a wider network.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was going to be my next question, actually. How do you see, countries interacting so far? And do you see particular countries that are sort of leading this conversation and that we can learn from?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer, to be honest, because there are so many countries out there who are doing amazing things, and quite a few countries who are doing things in slightly unusual or more niche areas, but they're really interesting developments. So I think in terms of the countries that are leading on this, the United Kingdom, that was a pioneer in this area, and it's already doing a lot of work with its Office for AI, with the Turing Institute, with a number of different bodies that it's got over there. And it's really innovative, and it's also looking how you can start to bring in good governance, strong ethical foundations, and understand some of the key issues and make sure that all of your people have got those basic building blocks of skills, data, investment, leadership. So they are obviously a country that certainly we in New Zealand look to see what they're doing. Singapore is another standout nation. Singapore has been doing some really amazing stuff, certainly in my Asia Pacific region, but you know, worldwide, everybody wants to talk to the Singaporeans about what they're doing. So their Smart National Group, the Smart National Digital Government Group,
yeah,
sort of driving the digital transformation of government, their National AI Office, AI Singapore. There's so many pieces of work. And then there's been a couple of fellows at the World Economic Forum with me from Singapore leading on specific pieces of work. And just the work that Singapore are doing is amazing. India, they're doing quite a lot of work in their AI Centre of Excellence in government as e-services. So looking to see if you can build a platform for government innovation, which I think is a really exciting development too. And I'm really interested to see where that goes. Malta is a little country that I just think has been doing some, it's got an amazing AI strategy, and they've set up the Malta Digital Innovation Authority, which I think is also really interesting, looking at positioning Malta as an innovation hub and making sure that it's got standards in place for what it does. So a lot of work there that's interesting. Australia, my nearest neighbour, they've set up the Gradient Institute, so looking at research, design, development and adoption of ethical AI. And their Human Rights Commission have also just gone out and done a huge, well, I think COVID might have put a stop to some of it, but a very large nationwide consultation with people on human rights and AI, which I think is also really exciting. Just turning over my page of notes here, thinking who else can I tell you about?
Yeah.
Canada,
there's a lot of positive developments there.
And I think that it's fascinating that a lot of countries too are starting to think, where are our particular skills, where are our strengths, and what can we do in this AI space, which I think speaks to the versatility and the use and the general use of AI.
So you're saying about Canada there?
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, well, Canada was, you know, one of the first countries to actually get an AI strategy, and they've really concentrated on research and development and innovation, and they've done some amazing things in Canada. And then the Finns have concentrated a lot on upskilling ordinary people and making sure that they've got a really good broad understanding of AI across their nation. And I think that's hugely exciting too. I think lots of great work going on there. And then there's other countries like Denmark, for example, they're concentrating a lot more on data, so the data that feeds AI. And again, I think there's a lot of valuable material in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems, well, most of the countries that you mentioned that might also be considered rich countries in a way that they do have a lot of, they're sort of leading developments in terms of AI as well. I think one of the concerns in the industry is also bringing us together to a certain level of equality, right? Because in a way, this technology will have the power to perhaps bring more inequality in the world the way we see it, right? How can we ensure that, you know, developing countries are not left behind?
Well, the interesting thing I think about AI, and I've been in a few conversations about this recently because my own country, New Zealand, is obviously a very, very tiny country. But what we're finding is some of the tiny countries like Estonia or New Zealand or Malta or Finland, they can use AI in their own context to solve some of their own domestic problems or to serve some of their own domestic policy agendas. And it doesn't really matter, I don't think, that you're not a huge country with a massive budget to throw at this. You can still do quite amazing things with AI in your own country if you've thought about what you want to do. And in terms of sort of looking at how you can make sure that inequality isn't entrenched, I think maybe that goes back to that center of excellence idea. Maybe I think it's important to have a globally understood or shared understanding of what responsible behavior looks like. And a center, if you've got a group of center of excellences who are all thinking about this, they might be able to start to embed what they think good practice looks like. So I think in terms of where this all starts, it all starts with a global sort of governance of AI. It starts with there being some issues like human rights, core ethical values to do with human life and autonomy, things that need a global response. And I think that once you've agreed on those general high level principles that are basically about human life and how we live as humans, once you've done that, countries can decide their own domestic agenda, decide what their values and ethics are, what their strategies are, what things they want to achieve, and they can start to build that under that broader umbrella of ethical principles.
Essentially. So it sounds like the process could be quite similar to, you know, the developments in human rights, right? How we had United Nations stepping in to bring some sort of standard globally, and then we had countries coming up with local laws to address any concerns.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think that's how it will probably shape up. And I think the fact that we already have human rights law means that we've got frameworks already in place that are probably perfectly applicable to emerging technologies like artificial intelligence.
Yeah. We must not forget that I think there's a lot of existing laws that already apply to this technology and can be used in a way, especially when it comes to, you know, if we talk about bias or discrimination, for example, a lot of countries would have a Privacy Act or a Discrimination Act that we could rely on.
I think so. And I think the trick there is trying to work out how you put that into a very fast-paced, constantly evolving world. But because you've already got the foundations, you've already got a set of agreed principles, hopefully it won't be that difficult to then think about doing this in a faster, more agile and nimble kind of way.
Yeah. So just building a little bit on the conversation, I guess, in sort of bringing equality there. So we know that, you know, a few countries have a stake in the AI race. How could we encourage, the broader concerns relating to ethics in AI are flagged given this reality, right? So like you said, and I think the center of excellence is probably something that can help with that in a way, providing a neutral ground for these discussions.
Yeah, and I think we probably do need neutral ground for this. I think we also sort of need to be respectful that different countries are going to have different views on what they want to use AI for. But I think if you've got a fairly broad framework saying these are non-negotiables for the world, this is what helps humanity. Under that umbrella, there's an awful lot you can do in your own domestic context with AI, and I think that should be fine. Like people can do a lot of things to achieve their own agendas. And I think in terms of sort of the entrenched issues with bias and inequality, I wouldn't have thought it was in any country's interest to allow that sort of thing to keep going, because it doesn't help in any way to have a growing underclass of people who are disadvantaged. So I think in my own country, we're looking at the moment about some of the things that we want to concentrate on in the centre of AI that we're going to hopefully look at developing. We've got a new government, so we need to talk to our new government about that and see how we go. But we are going to design anything like that with a distinctly New Zealand lens, which means we're going to infuse it with Te Ao Māori considerations. That's our Indigenous people. So we want to design it from the outset with two quite different worldviews, the Western worldview and the Indigenous Māori worldview. But we also want it to reflect our diverse population, because we've got something like, I think, 88 different ethnic groups that live in New Zealand called New Zealand Home. So it's a very, very broad base of people with quite differing views and different ways of looking at things. So we want to make sure that any kind of bias that might be in the data that we're using is identified and pulled out, and that we co-design going forward so that people's voices are heard right at the very beginning, and that any applications we design and develop are going to be of greatest benefit to all New Zealanders, not just a small subgroup. And that anything we do is already anchored in the cultural and social and economic reality of our country. So we think this gives us quite a golden opportunity, actually, because we can design a lot of this from the outset to be as impartial and fair as we can make it. So I think a lot of that legacy stuff that we've got, this is our chance to actually really dig into that and drill into that and try and get rid of it. And I think, you know, there's a lot of countries that can start to do that sort of thing, a lot of countries that can take the opportunity that AI gives them to start to build a much fairer society.
Yeah, I really like that. Like you said, I think this might look differently for each country, you know. Of course, New Zealand, as you said, is working with a lot of races, so it has to think about that in a certain way. So, and I think, and I do believe AI has the potential to perhaps correct things if we get it right from the beginning.
I think so. And I think that if you are working with a number of different groups within your own society, one of the things you learn very early on is nobody has the right answer and everybody's view is valid. And I think that works on a domestic level. But when you raise that up to an international level, it works at that level too. And it just is a case of sitting down and on the ground. Maybe it's enough that we have that overarching level framework that does work for everybody.
Yeah. Now moving to a big question. So if we are to cover issues relating to the future holds in respect of AI, how do you see the collaboration of human machine unfolding in the next few years?
I don't know, because I think at that point I probably also revert to the Star Trek or the Hollywood movie views of what a technology enabled world could look like. But I think for me, there are so many issues facing the world at the moment that are global. And I think this comes down to having global governance of AI. We are only going to solve climate change or rising inequality if we all work together. And I think we need to start to think about that. We need to start to think about how we can use AI to break down some of these borders, to break down some of these jurisdictions, and to make sure that we work together as humans, not just as different countries. And maybe we start regionally. Maybe we start thinking, all right, well, the Asia-Pacific region, the Europeans, you know, the Americas, there may be different ways of doing it like that, and then we can merge different sort of groups together. But I think there's also a number of things that if we work together as a globe, we could do. And one of the big ones that I worry about a little bit in this space is actually thinking about the future. Because even the fact that you asked me that question, I have to say, is a little bit unusual for me, because most people in my day-to-day life don't talk about what the future, the long-term future, is going to look like. Because there's a general view, I think, that technology is changing the future so quickly that you can't guess what it's going to be like. You aren't going to be able to do that kind of futures thinking or foresighting. So I think we might need to stop and think, as humanity, where do we want AI to take us? You know, what are the opportunities that we've got and what are the risks, and how can we look beyond short-term gains or even national gains and start to think about where do we want AI to take the planet and people? So what does that look like? And we do that as a country, as a globe, not just as a country. And then I also think, going back to sort of our conversation before about the framework, we really need to think about what are the things we value globally. Are they things like civil liberties? Are they creativity? Are they entrepreneurship? Are they human rights? What are the things that we think are non-negotiables that we want to make sure are embedded into that framework? And then I think at the end of the day too, someone I was talking to a few days ago said to me that trust is the currency of the future. And I think that's so true. It really resonated with me. And I think it's absolutely imperative that all of us working in governments and businesses all across the world in this AI space actually do start to talk to people from all parts of society and make sure that they start to understand what AI is, what it can do, what the risks are, be open and transparent about what's happening, and start to bring them along for the ride as well. Because if we don't get that trust, if we lose the trust of the people, we're not ever going to be able to realize the potential of this.
Yeah, I love that phrase as well. And I do believe that perhaps that's how we're going to get to some type of cooperation and just get industry to join in this conversation. Because in a way, you know, if you have trust, you are able to innovate, it's going to be financially rewarding and so on. So I think we all can agree that that's beneficial for everyone.
I think so. I think that certainly for me, trust and transparency are the two key parts, I think, to developing any kind of approach with AI.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we know the World Economic Forum is doing a lot of work in this area and with recommending Center of Excellence. What do you think we can see in terms of looking for the next few years? Do you see the start of the centers of excellence around the world if we haven't seen them yet?
Well, I think the World Economic Forum is doing an awful lot of work in a number of different areas here. So there's a number of different levers. So we've got a lot of work going on looking at what you might do to start to upskill senior leadership teams and make sure that the leaders in our world understand what AI is. There's a lot of work going on in terms of protecting children and making sure that they're safe in an AI world, making sure that levers available to us like procurement and funding are done in a way that enables safety for people. So making sure that ethics is built into AI right from the start is something that's really important to the forum. And so I think that in the next few years, we're going to start to see a lot of non-government organisations like the forum, like the OECD, start to pull people together, start to pull countries together to have these big conversations that need to happen about what is the future of AI and how are we as a globe going to start to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds really good. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to have this conversation with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's been really great to talk to you.
We will have this latest article that we mentioned in the conversation available. But for people trying to reach out to you, what is the best way?
Probably send me an email through the World Economic Forum address and I'll be able to get it from there.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.